And now, more tips with your host, Rebecca, on lifestyle improvement.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and is not to be interpreted as medical advice. Hello, and welcome to our program, Lifestyle Improvement. This is your host, Rebecca. Today, we are very happy to have with us Dr. Barry Jacobs. Dr. Barry Jacobs is a clinical psychologist, family therapist, and the author of the book, The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. As a clinician, he specializes in helping families cope with serious and chronic medical illnesses. As an educator, he works as the director of behavioral sciences for the Crozer Keystone Family Medicine Residency Program in Springfield, Pennsylvania. He's also had several adjunct faculty positions with the Temple University School of Medicine, University of Pennsylvania School of Nursing, and the Department of Psychology of the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. He is the national spokesperson on family caregiving for the American Heart Association and a member of the AARP Caregiving Advisory Panel. He was a member of the American Psychological Association Presidential Task Force on Caregiving that produced the Caregiver Briefcase website. A former journalist, he writes a monthly column on family caregiving for AARP.org and was the longtime editor of the In Sickness and Health column for the American Psychological Association Journal, Families, Systems, and Health. Dr. Jacobs has been kind enough to join us all the way from Philadelphia, where he resides with his family, and is joining us via Skype to share with us a little bit more about his book, The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers. How are you today, Dr. Jacobs? Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Rebecca. Thank you for having me.
You bet. It is always fantastic when I get to read books that are touching. And your book, which, by the way, you have a website where people can see your book. The book, again, is The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. This book is in your website, which is www.emotionalsurvivalguide.com. Again, that is www.emotionalsurvivalguide.com. And in this website, people can see a little bit more of what your book is about. And I had the pleasure to look through it, and I saw a very impacting prologue. Tell me a little bit more about your life story that brought you to the place where you are now as a psychologist helping caregivers and writing books to support them.
Sure, Rebecca. So I grew up in a family in which, when I was a teenager, my father had brain cancer. Mm. And at the point at which he was diagnosed with brain cancer, my family changed very dramatically. My father had been an attorney. He had been a litigator. And one of the first symptoms he had from the brain cancer was he lost the powers of speech. Mm. So overnight, he had to stop working. My mother, who had been a homemaker, had to begin working two different jobs to try to compensate for the loss of my father's income. So we went through some very difficult times. One of the things that happened in my family is that my mother and my father's mother, my grandmother, had always kind of vied competitively for my father's attention. And then when he became sick, my mother and grandmother, unfortunately, really competed with one another and argued a great deal about every aspect of my father's medical care. So they argued about which doctors he should see and which hospitals he should go to. And then my grandmother had read about an experimental treatment for brain cancer in California and wanted my mother literally to sell our house outside of New York and move us cross country to California to give my father the best chance for living. And my mother had two children to take care of, had her own aging parents living nearby. And she said no to my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And pretty much from that point onward, they really stopped talking to one another. Mm-hmm. My father died after about a year. And from the day of the funeral, my mother and grandmother did not speak again at all for 17 years until the day of my wedding.
Wow.
So when I tell the story, I always tell folks that this is an example of how caregiving can weaken family bonds. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a tragedy for someone to contract something like cancer, But you know, in some cases, family members rally together and the family bonds become stronger. Unfortunately, in my family, the family bonds became much weaker, and that greatly compounded the amount of suffering that occurred because of my father's cancer. So I continued to have a relationship with my grandmother after my father died, but it was really a very strained relationship because, frankly, she had nothing nice to say about my mother, and that made it very difficult for me to have a good relationship with her.
Right.
So what I always say is, in my work as a psychologist, I'm trying to help families do a better job at caregiving than my own family did.
So obviously you had some very difficult experiences that may have maybe influenced the reason that you became a psychologist. But then my question to you is, what brought you to the place where you wanted to work with caregivers and write a book to support them?
So when I went to school for psychology, I was in a 5-year doctoral clinical psychology program. And the third year in the program, I had to get to a practicum site, and I didn't have a car. And there was only one site I could get to on a regular basis with public transportation, and that was to work in a physical medicine rehab hospital, Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital in Camden, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about what physical medicine rehab was, but I went there, and what I found is that it was filled with people with stroke and head injury and brain cancer. And really, from the moment I arrived there, I realized that this was going to be my life's work, working with folks who had neurological problems and other medical illnesses, and specifically working with their family members.
So what brought you to the place where you decided to write the book?
I had been, prior to becoming a psychologist, I had been a journalist. I love writing. I wanted to, most of the books that were out there at the time I was writing were how-to books, and I wanted to write something that told more of a story, that imparted information about how people could walk this journey as well as they could, but that would tell a story that really captured more of what family members go through in the not just months but years of caregiving. Mm-hmm. So the book is a combination of a story about a family that is two daughters in their 50s, mm-hmm. who are caring for their mother with metastatic ovarian cancer. It's a fictional story, but I use the techniques of fiction by way of depicting a family going through this crisis and all the different challenges that they face, as well as things which help them along the way. In doing this, I get a lot of aspects of what goes on between siblings, what goes on between adult children and their parents, and also what goes on between families and healthcare professionals, and did this through the illustration of a story.
That's awesome. And, you know, it is a very engaging book because it is fiction and it keeps you very involved in the plot. But at the same time, like you said, you are presenting some very significant issues. For example, the first days, something that is maybe something a caregiver doesn't think about before they're going to become involved in caregiving, but so very significant. What do you have to tell me about that?
Well, for most people, what happens is... medical illness to a loved one happens all at once. Even if it's a slowly progressing disease like dementia, there's a day of dawning, a realization where people suddenly wake up and say, oh my Lord, something's going on here, which is going to change our lives. Mm-hmm. And those are days which most of us are not prepared for. Mm-hmm. So I've been in the healthcare profession a long time. And I've more recently been dealing with my mother's dementia. And prior to that, I've been dealing with my stepfather's dementia. And I can tell you that, you know, when the days came for me, that first day when someone said, you know, you ought to think about getting your mom some help, or, we think she has a diagnosis of dementia, it threw me for a loop as well. Mm-hmm. And what happens during those first days is that most families are really scrambling to get information, to get their footing, to put together a plan. Oftentimes, family members are in the short term are able to put aside their jobs, their hobbies, their friends, mm-hmm. and put their shoulder to the wheel to really help a loved one. But the idea is that most of these caregiving situations are ones that are going to go on for a long period of time, and that the challenge for families is to develop sustainable plans, mm-hmm. where people are balancing work and caregiving and, you know, caring for other family members and caregiving, and actually having respite occasionally in caregiving. And achieving that balance is extremely hard.
This is your host, Rebecca. And now we will take a short break, and we will be right back with more ideas on lifestyle improvement.
A unique and specialized approach to spinal care is what you will find in the Advanced Spinal Care Clinic in Graham, Washington. Here's Dr. Craig Lipinski explaining why Nuka Care is unlike any other treatment.
Our goal is that we're making a specialized correction to the skull, the atlas, and the neck of each individual that is custom made or custom and specific created to get them healthy and then have them stay that way.
One of only 23 board certified Nuka practitioners in the world, Dr. Craig Lipinski offers you care that can significantly impact your health in positive ways.
This week we've seen somebody in here who's had a 50-point drop in blood pressure by having the skull, atlas, and neck corrected to a proper position.
To find out more about how Nuka Care can change your life, visit www.nuccawashington.com or call 253-445-8181.
From those first days to the point at which people have found that that sustainable balance is often takes weeks and months for people to figure this out.
Is that part of defining the commitment that you have as a caregiver or that you will have as a caregiver?
I think so. So you mentioned defining commitments, and I think that's something which is very important for all caregivers to consider. A lot of times when I meet caregivers, what they do is they say that they'll do whatever needs to be done to help their loved one without really knowing what it is that they're signing up for. And unfortunately, what happens is gradually over time, the number of tasks that are kind of heaped onto their shoulders gets greater and greater, and so much so that they can't really carry the load any longer.
Right.
So what I talk about with folks, particularly in the early days, is to try to look down the road, to try to imagine what it is that they might have to do, and to begin to figure out what it is that they're willing and able to do, and to actually maybe define things that they're willing to commit to, but also to define limits that they may have. So a typical limit is, a woman may say, I'm happy to care for my father who has dementia in my home for as long as I can, but if his needs become such, and if his behavior becomes such that he begins to detract from my parenting my children, then I'm no longer going to be able to keep him in my home, and I'll have to make other appropriate arrangements for him. And so that to me is defining a commitment. This is a daughter who is saying what she's willing to do, but also what she may not be willing to do over time. And when people define commitments, they take situations which are often overwhelming, and they're exercising as much control as they can. And what we know from psychology is that when people exercise at least some modicum of control, then they're much less likely to become depressed, and to really keep their head above water as they go through this. So defining commitments is a very important early step in learning to become a caregiver.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the boundaries, because if you define the commitment, then you have to set some boundaries as far as how much you're willing to do or able to do and how much you are needing to get help. And that was another piece that I thought was very interesting. In one of the articles you sent to me that was titled Receiving with Grace, it was very interesting how you talked about having caregivers give in order to be able to get the whole concept of receiving as well, correct?
That's correct. I think for most of us, it's much easier to give than it is to receive. For most of us, whether we're talking about our aging parents or ourselves as caregivers, it feels to us that when we're receiving, that we're somehow diminished, that we're somehow falling down on the job, and that we're being less of the people than we ordinarily are. And yet, unless we're willing to accept help that's offered or to reach out for help, we're not likely to run this race as well as we can. So the metaphor that I use, and I kind of beat this metaphor to death, is one that many other people have used, and that is caregiving as marathon. And that
absolutely.
I think of it as a marathon because, number one, it's a long, long race. It takes takes a lot of effort to run this, but as like any marathon, people have to be willing to learn a little bit about the lay of the land, to learn about the disease that they're dealing with, The need to learn to replenish themselves along the way and receive help along the way.
Exactly.
Nobody who's running a marathon runs past the water station at mile 5 and says, no, thank you, I'm not thirsty. But that's typically what caregivers do, especially right. in the early stages. They refuse help. And my advice to caregivers instead is to receive, accept all help that's offered, because that's what's most likely to get people from the starting line to the finish line
exactly.
and to do the job that they want to do.
Absolutely. Like you mentioned, utilizing your support in a smart way. And that is a really good concept, because caregivers just seem in general to have a difficult time accepting help. Why do you think caregivers in general have that problem? And I'm wondering, some of them do come to you. So it is interesting because they come to you kind of seeking for help, but yet they still have difficulties accepting the help. What is your opinion on that?
I think in general, caregivers are afraid that they're going to be criticized by others. They're afraid that the person that they're caring for is going to criticize them if they bring a home health aide into the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then people have their own internal self-criticism
right.
that they sit in judgment on themselves and say, if I were a better daughter, if I were a better son, mm-hmm. then I would be able to do this all by myself. But unfortunately, that's just not realistic in most cases.
Right.
In terms of caregivers coming to me as a psychologist, and I will grant you that there's probably more the exception than the rule,
mm-hmm.
That most caregivers don't need psychologists. And mm-hmm. most people, even if they're struggling, are not reaching out for mental health help.
Right.
But those that do are often referred to me by physicians mm-hmm. or family members when it's evident that they're becoming burned out
right.
and despondent about the caregiving that they're doing. And a lot of what I do with them is to try to normalize how they feel by letting them know how difficult caregiving is, but to try to help them run as smart and strategic a race as possible
mm-hmm.
and to make good decisions along the way.
Right.
And most of the time I stay with caregivers for a year or more, and, mm-hmm. and often long after the care recipient dies,
mm-hmm.
To help them readjust back to the rest of life, because mm-hmm. that too is very difficult.
Absolutely. And so when you speak about healthy sacrifice, that is one of the things then you guide caregivers to be able to understand that what the sacrifice means and how it can be healthy, correct?
I think we all make sacrifices on behalf of mm-hmm. people we love. The question becomes, how much sacrifice is one willing to take on,
mm-hmm.
and what does it mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when people are working on behalf of an aging parent who they really love, and they're making, they're sacrificing time and energy to care for them, and that could be very, very gratifying and could be a really enriching personal experience. On the other hand, if someone is making sacrifices on behalf of someone with whom they have had a bad relationship over time,
mm-hmm.
Then oftentimes they feel entrapped, they feel victimized, and the sacrifices they're making are a kind of torment. So a lot of times it really depends on the meaning that they derive from the sacrifices they make, and that meaning stems from the context of the relationship that they've had historically with the person they're caring for. But it is very possible to make sacrifices and for it to be something that actually enhances and enriches one's life, not detracts from it.
Absolutely. How do you convince caregivers to get help? What techniques or what strategies do you have to help them come to that place?
Well, sometimes I stand on my head and I flap my arms because I feel like I have nothing better to do.
Okay. Does it work?
Before I reach that point. I use the caregiver marathon metaphor a lot. And people seem to get that.
Mm-hmm.
I talk with them about how if they allow other family members to help them,
right.
that by receiving help from those other family members, they're giving the gift of being able to contribute to those family members.
Right.
I also just talk about how when family caregivers talk with other caregivers and they see that those other caregivers accept help,
mm-hmm.
Have put together a caregiving team of people who all pitch in, mm-hmm. then it kind of normalizes this the necessity of accepting help mm-hmm. in order to do the best job one can.
Absolutely. In your book, you also talk about weighing hope and acceptance. What do you mean with that?
Well, with any medical diagnosis, we have a prognosis that goes along with the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
The prognosis tells us what the likely course of the illness is going to be. But prognosis is not 100% predictive. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always a certain amount of unpredictability and uncertainty in that. And so in that uncertainty, many caregivers hold on to sometimes unrealistic hope mm-hmm. that, for instance, if their loved one has dementia and they care for them well enough, that they somehow can stop the progression of that dementia mm-hmm. or even turn that dementia around. And that, you know, those hopes kind of spur them forward to work very hard, but they also may just set them up for great disappointment if those right. they're not realistic. Mm-hmm. So there's always has to be a balance between hoping and then accepting that sometimes there are limits as to what we can achieve, and that we have to accept the way an illness is going to play itself out, and then just play, you know, do the best we can with that situation. That's very hard for people because sometimes, you know, we live in a culture where, you know, pop psychology tells us that we have to remain positive. Mm-hmm. So when people are told that they need to accept a negative diagnosis like dementia, it feels to them like they're accepting defeat. And to me, it's not accepting defeat. Being realistic is mm-hmm. is merely best preparing oneself to deal with the situation at hand, and to that means you're going to both take care of yourself and take care of your loved one, you know, all that much more. And that's what we're aiming for. Absolutely. A lot of times when people are unrealistic, when their hopes exceed what's realistic for the situation, then they're even more reluctant to accept help. Because they somehow have that magical belief that if they try hard enough, they can turn it around. So, you know, ultimately with many illnesses, acceptance is the best that we're going to be able to do.
Absolutely. And I think that you said it very well, and that hope and acceptance is a daily struggle, I think, because you really do, as caregivers on a daily basis, think you could have done better, or if something went wrong, you know, what did you do? There's a lot of questioning yourself and your own skills.
We're all very good at Monday morning quarterbacking and self-flagellation.
Yes.
And all that. You know, we didn't get a reputation for having lots of guilt for no reason at all.
Exactly. So that really is something that caregivers have to work on a daily basis. And one of the things that I think that is helpful is to be grateful for each day, because each day is going to bring challenges and it's going to bring wonderful things. If we get to have our loved one be there at the end of the day, I think that is an accomplishment. And I think to be grateful for the small things is something that's very helpful. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a challenge because oftentimes we tend to compare today with what we had yesterday. Mm-hmm. And if yesterday or the person we love was whole and self-sufficient right. and now they're not,
exactly.
then we can come away feeling that today somehow lacks something important. And it's true, there are losses, but we have to, as you say, be grateful for the presence of our loved one in our lives, be grateful for the abilities that they still have and the interactions that we can still have with them. And that capacity to be grateful every day, I think, is an extremely important way for people to sustain themselves psychologically over the months and years of caregiving.
Absolutely. And I hear that from many professionals. Many professionals agree that gratitude is definitely something that helps on a daily basis to be able to complete your work and stay as focused and positive as possible. So you also, in your book, you talk about fostering awareness and flexibility. And I can only imagine that has to do with a lot of all this put together and being able to get a realistic concept of the fact that things may not run the way you planned them on a daily basis.
will they not run on a daily basis, but what happens on a daily basis over time is going to change.
Mm-hmm.
And because none of these situations are static. The person we're caring for is getting older. Mm-hmm. Their disease may be progressing.
Right.
There may be other external circumstances which are changing. We have to be ready to change all the time.
Right.
And what I unfortunately see is many caregivers develop a care routine. They get their home health aides in place to come at certain hours of the day and time. They get their family members all lined up to play certain roles. They've worked hard to put together this plan. And then it's like, you know, then something happens and the plan no longer is working the way they want it to work.
Right.
And it's really necessary at that point to either fine tune it or, you know, rip it up and start again. And people are very reluctant to do that. They want to hold on to what they have. They don't want to constantly give ground.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's what is required to be aware of the changes, to be flexible enough to make the changes. To me, the very best caregivers are great problem solvers,
mm-hmm.
and they're very creative people. They come up with multiple solutions, mm-hmm. and they try different things. They do a lot of trial and error, and they find what works best for their you know, themselves and their family.
Absolutely.
And they may get lots of help from self-help books like mine, or mm-hmm. from social service professionals, healthcare professionals, but ultimately they know their family, and they have to come up with their own ideas. They've got to try them out. And they have to be willing to just create anew all the time,
right.
in order to make this work, again, through the months and years of caregiving.
And remember that in our program, we present our opinion and the opinion of our guest, and it's not to be interpreted as medical advice.
If you would like to advertise with us, please give us a call at 877-957-7387. Extension 101. That again is 877-957-7387, extension 101. Or send us an email to producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. That again is producer@lifestyleimprovement.com. Thank you so much for joining us for part one of our interview with Dr. Barry Jacobs. Dr. Barry Jacobs is a clinical psychologist, family therapist, and author of the book, The Emotional Survival Guide for Caregivers, Looking After Yourself and Your Family While Helping an Aging Parent. Don't forget to join us again next Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 on Lifestyle Improvement for part two of our interview with Dr. Barry Jacobs.